Radio Ghana.
Welcome to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. My name is Abraham Asari. In tonight's edition, NDC freezes primaries in constituencies where PNC has MPs. How does the PNC feel about that? Ghana honors teachers for their dedication to duty, but some are complaining. What's their concern? And excessive noise making in Ghana, while laws on noise pollution not biting. Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana in Accra and all regional FM stations of the GBC. You can also get us live on the internet at gbcghana.com. Send us a text, 026-441-8767. Text line again is 026-441-8767. Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana in Accra. Do you live or work in an environment where there is excessive noise? Are you aware of the health effects of such high levels of noise? Even though there are bylaws regulating noise making, these laws are flouted with impunity, as individuals, entrepreneurs, churches and social groups, we are most often guilty of noise pollution. Why are laws on noise pollution not effectively enforced? Behind the News finds out from some major stakeholders in regulating noise making. First, Mrs. Angelina Tutuamensa, Deputy Director and Head of Public Affairs at the Environmental Protection Agency. Good evening to you, Madam Tutuamensa.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
Oh, good. Welcome to Behind the News. So, first of all, what is noise pollution?
Noise pollution is when a sound is irritable to whoever is listening to it, or whoever is also...
When the sound is what?
It's irritable. It is a nuisance.
Okay.
Yes. It is a word derived from the Latin word nausea. And nausea means feeling sick in the stomach with an urge to vomit.
So if somebody plays music that I'm not comfortable with, even though he's enjoying it, to me it is noise and it is pollution.
It's unwanted or offensive sound.
So by our regulations in this country, can you tell us what the sources of noise pollution are?
There are two major sources of noise pollution. We have industrial sources and non-industrial sources. For the purposes of this interview, let me talk about non-industrial sources. We talk about the use of loudspeakers during various religious or non-religious public or private functions. We have construction activities, the use of various machinery, equipment, which also increase noise levels in the surrounding environment. And we have noise on the highway, on railway tracks, vehicular noise. But let me also mention about industrial noises. That is actually within industrial areas, and it's got to do with welding, pressing, blasting. But you realize that now in our communities, there are cement block factories, and those also create a lot of noise. We have drinking bars, and they also produce excessive noise within the community.
Is there any condition under which noise can be permitted in an environment under our laws?
Yes, there is. The Local Government Act 1993 empowers the District Assembly by Section 10 to be responsible for the development of their area, development improvement of their area. Now, there are certain bylaws within the AMA bylaw of 1995, that is the abatement of noise. And this is to do with the prohibition of sale of records and other recorded music. If you do not have approval or license, you cannot do that. Another one is the prohibition of the play of any recorded music in public for advertising purposes. You need to get a permit to do that. The other one is when you are running your restaurant or drinking bar. There is the people are supposed to have a permit. And within the permit, there are rules and regulations. There are permitting conditions, which actually tells you that you should play your music, you should conduct your activity within the confines of your area.
So the question is there any condition, you know, do we have any circumstances under which noise could be permitted?
No, in spite of the laws
that we have.
Noise cannot be permitted. The only times noise can be permitted are certain areas which have been zoned.
Mm-hmm.
The Environmental Protection Agency have some guidelines. And these guidelines have been put into zone A, B1, B2, C1, C2, D, and DE. Now, within areas from light industrial place of entertainment or public assembly and place of worship, the noise level should, in the daytime, about 65 decibels. When we talk about 65 decibels, we mean in a classroom, primary classroom, where, you know, the noise is not too much, or just a bit of a loud radio, but not too loud. Now, in the night, it should be 60. And with 60, it is like having a conversation. Predominantly, commercial areas, we classify it as C2, and that is 70 decibels in the daytime. Now, when you talk about 70 decibels, you're talking about something like alarm clock noise or heavy traffic. When you come to, let's say, light or predominantly heavy industrial area, in the daytime, it should be also be 70, and in the nighttime, it should be 70. So it is permitted, but it should be within a certain level. So within
the industrial site,
we should do that.
So a place like the central business district of Accra, what kind of level of noise is permissible there?
The permissible levels are between 65 in the daytime and 60 in the nighttime. And then 70 also in the daytime and 65 in the nighttime. So predominantly commercial areas is 70 in the daytime and 65 in the night.
But you agree with me that there is noise everywhere. Whose duty is it to enforce the laws that we have on noise making?
Indeed, there is noise everywhere, and it is increasing each day. Now, the Environmental Protection Agency Act 1994, Act 490, mandates the Environmental Protection Agency to prescribe standards and guidelines relating to pollution, be it water, air, land, and noise. When it comes to the enforcement, it is the decentralized assemblies because, as I mentioned earlier, they've been empowered by Metropolitan Assembly Bylaw 1995. And they are supposed to permit when you have an activity that has a noise relation to it. So the centralized assembly are supposed to do the permitting and enforce. The Environmental Protection Agency actually looks at it from an industrial sense. But however, we also help the assembly. We give them training. We, not too long ago, have given them some equipment to measure the noise levels. So it is actually a concerted effort by everybody. But then these are the two major organizations that in the lead.
The attention has always been on the churches when it comes to noise making. Does the church need a permit from the EPA before starting?
They need a permit from the decentralized assembly where they are operating, not from EPA.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they put up the building, depending on the size of the building, they need to put in acoustics. They need to go to town and country planning to see the zoning area. And that is where EPA will also come in to look at whether the area they are going to put that building, it will have other adverse effects on the environment. But it is a decentralized assembly that permits them to either, you know, have a permit to start a church or not.
But how does the EPA liaise with the assemblies in controlling noise, environmental pollution, noise pollution? Yes.
There is a committee within each region and district, and the EPA serves on that committee. The EPA serves on the committee of the town planning organization as well. And therefore, there are certain decisions that are made. I mean, when people come with their planning plans, they look at it and see what has to be done. But
is this done? Because the problem is pervasive.
You agree with me that most, some of them do not have permits. And it is up to us, citizens, neighbors, communities, to actually inform appropriate authorities as to there is a church here, and this church is making so much noise. And then what their organization would do is to come and find out, number one, do you even have a permit to operate?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So if no one comes to inform anyone, we may not know, because EPA and cannot be anywhere, everywhere. For your information, EPA has less than 300 professional staff, the whole of Ghana.
I see. Okay, well, thank you very much for talking to us tonight, Mrs. Angelina Tutuamensa. Thank you so much for talking to us, and you have a good night. She's the Deputy Director and Head of Public Affairs at the Environmental Protection Agency. You're listening to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. We have now on the line Dr. Enim Boateng. He's the Accra Metro Health Director. Good evening to you, Dr. Enim Boateng. Welcome to Radio Ghana. Now, so can you take us through the AMA bylaws on noise making?
Hello.
Can you hear me, Dr. Enim Boateng?
Yes, I can hear you.
What are the bylaws of the AMA say on noise making?
Noise making in general.
Yes.
Yes, there's a provision in the bylaws, especially on noise making from, you know, churches. If I may narrow it down to that.
Why churches? Because noise is noise.
Yeah, noise is noise, but we are getting most of the complaints against the churches. You know, but generally, you know, the EPA and the AMA work together, and the EPA has given us guidelines that any noise above 55 in the residential area is a nuisance, and therefore it should not be tolerated. So we go specifically by the guidelines of the EPA, you know, and there's a provision in the bylaw on that, which I wanted to read to you. It says any noise which is above 55, which is a nuisance to the public, is against the bylaw, and therefore people, causing it will have to be punished.
Yet the AMA allows churches, permits churches to build, you know, establish themselves within, what do you call it, residential areas. Why do you give permits to such bodies when you know that?
No, the AMA has not granted any churches to, you know, operate within a residential area.
So any church operating in a residential area is not supposed to be there?
No, if it is there and it has permit, because most of the churches were there before when the place became residential. Because those ones have their permit. But this time, the trend is different. You go to a residential area, and the residents have been turned into churches. And that is what the AMA frowns upon.
So for a church which was in an area before the place became a residential area, what advice would you give such churches?
Yeah, we give that church, the advice we give them is that they should operate within the EPA permissible levels, you know, for day and for night.
But would you agree with me if I say that there is laxity in the enforcement of the laws on noise pollution?
I wouldn't agree with you at all. You see, what we do is we rely on informants. When we are notified of a noise nuisance, then we go in and investigate. So for as long as we don't receive any complaints, we don't go.
Well, but there have been concerns that people complain and nothing is done.
No. Whenever we receive any complaints, we immediately go to investigate it, and then we take the appropriate step to abate the nuisance.
Okay, so take us through the health implications of noise pollution.
Yes, there are a number of health implications for noise nuisance. Noise nuisance pollution. Now, if somebody is exposed to noise for a very long time, the person, you know, tends to develop what we call hearing impairment. You know, hearing impairment is that he can become deaf as a result of excessive exposure to noise. So that is number one. In fact, number two, he can have interference with spoken communication. You see, all these things I'm saying are what the WHO has identified. Number three, exposure to noise can cause sleep disturbances. When we're exposed to noise for a very long time, you find it very difficult to sleep, and it is going to affect your, you know, your health. Now, another important, you know, this effect is cardiovascular disturbances, where the person will develop hypertension, you know, palpitations, restlessness, you know, dizziness and whatnot. And then we have what we call disturbances in mental health. You know, because you've been exposed to the noise for a very long time, you cannot sleep, it tends to affect your mental status. You know, then we have impaired task performance. And because somebody has been exposed to noise maybe the whole night. In the daytime, he's unable to perform his normal duties. So these are some of the things. And then we have what we call the negative social behavior and the annoyance reaction.
Yeah.
When you are exposed to noise for a very long time, you tend to behave abnormally. You know, you become withdrawn, sort of. You know, you become easily irritated and you become annoyed. So these are some of the, adverse effects of noise on human beings.
How about those who engage in noise making themselves? Is there any implication for them health wise? But they seem to enjoy it.
Those who
create the noise, yes.
Who are making the noise? Yeah, they are also, they are also suffering. You know, for example, if they are using the loud speakers and they are also in it, they also tend to have all these effects. So it is not only to, those who are,
Who are the victims of it? Okay.
Those who are the perpetrators themselves tend to also get affected.
And the AMA has any public education policy or plan on this issue?
Yeah, AMA in conjunction with the EPA have been, going about educating the people on the ill effects of noise. You know, we have environmental health officers who go around on daily basis. You know, we have officers who go to the noise sources and talk to them. We do so in schools. We go to the air, in papers, whatever media we get, we make sure we use it. So yes, we are doing some education on the noise nuisance.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us. And Dr. Simpson Nenimboating of the Accra Metro Health Directorate. Thank you so much and have a good night.
Thanks, sir.
Well, the NDC has suspended primaries in constituencies where PNC has seats. The action followed complaints from the PNC describing the decision by the NDC to organize the primaries as a betrayal. The PNC became incensed over the NDC's moves, saying agreements the party entered into with the NDC, which allowed its members to sit with the majority, are being ignored. So how convenient is the marriage between the NDC and the PNC in Parliament? If speaking out to Majority Leader in Parliament, Cletus Avoka. Good evening to you, Mr. Avoka. Welcome to Radio Ghana tonight.
Thank you very much.
So, first of all, why the decision to reverse, plans to organize primaries in those areas where the PNC has its members representing the people?
Indeed, it's not a decision to reverse as such. I recall that as far back as August, I drew the attention of the General Secretary of the NDC, Honorable Asiedu Nketiah, to the fact that it was prudent that the two PNC members of parliament and one other independent member of parliament who is doing business with the NDC in parliament should have their primaries or in their constituency deferred to the same time that the NDC is going to organize primaries for their own sitting MPs. It is unfortunate that the General Secretary, Mr. Mona of the PNC, did not link up with me or the General Secretary of the NDC to be able to clear the situation before he went on air. So it is not a reversal as such, but we have taken a decision as far back as August that to keep in place with the PNC and the independent member for Wulinse, and the fact that they support us so much in Parliament, outside Parliament, we think that it is only fair that once NDC sitting MPs are not here having primaries, that should be the same thing that should apply to their respective constituencies.
So you mean, Mr. Mona, on hearing that the primaries were going ahead, should have contacted the leadership of Parliament before going public?
Well, he could have found out from the General Secretary of the NDC or anyone senior member of the party or myself that he understands that primaries are going on in the constituency where we have PNC sitting MPs, even though NDC sitting MPs do not have primaries, and whether the thing is true or not. If he had found out, would have told him the truth of the matter. But we had decided over a month ago that we would defer the primaries in respect of this PSC constituency and the independent member of parliament who are being busy with the NDC in parliament.
But have you taken this latest decision or this decision not to have primaries there now because of a written agreement with the PNC?
Well, as I said, as far back as 2009, there was this understanding or agreement between the two parties that the PSC would support the NDC in parliament to be able to prosecute the government agenda or government business in parliament. And I think that to a large extent, they have supported us ably. So, keeping faith with that agreement or that understanding, it is only fair that once we are not yet conducting primaries in the NDC constituencies, where there are NDC MPs, we should also extend that to the PNC.
So you've spoken about the agreement and the side of the PNC. They committed themselves to working with you. What kind of commitment did the NDC make towards them?
Well, I wasn't privy to that agreement, but my understanding is that what is good for the goose is equally good for the gander. So if we think that, and as of now, given the nature of business we have in Parliament, we should not disturb the status quo of the NDC sitting members of Parliament in their constituencies. It should also apply to the PNC members of Parliament so that they also have the peace of mind to do work in the chamber rather than go back and say that they are now a contestant and therefore have to go back and then also campaign. Let me add that without prejudice, we are not saying that we are not going to contest in those constituencies come 2012. That decision is yet to be taken by the National Executive in the future. But we are saying that, as of now, we are only conducting primary in orphan constituencies. And even though in those PNC constituencies, we may claim that, we could claim that they are orphan constituencies for us. Because of the agreement that the PNC is doing business with us, we consider them as sitting MPs as well. And therefore, we should extend the same courtesy to them.
We thank you very much for talking to us, Mr. Avoka, and have a good night.
Thank you very much.
Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana in Accra. And that was the Majority Leader in Parliament, Cletus Avoka. Send us a text on the issues we're discussing tonight. The line is 026-441-8767. 026-441-8767. Some of your text messages are here. All professionals can boast, but the teacher taught them all. Congratulations to all teachers from Andrew Manga and Boku. Akotura Zak Tamale. Congratulations to the award-winning teachers. If teachers put up their best in discharging their duties, students' poor performance would have been a thing of the past. This one from Frank JC. Trained teachers posted in September last year have not received their salaries up till now. He asks why. This is Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana in Accra.
The other side.
So now let's do this story on the Teachers' Day today, where the country's teachers were the focus of attention as another Teachers' Day was observed today with a large gathering at the Takoradi Jubilee Park in the Western Region. Apro was sitting down, a teacher at the Garden City School for the Intellectually Disabled in Kumasi emerged the overall best teacher for 2010. But there are calls by some interest groups within the teaching profession on the organizers to distribute the awards evenly amongst all teachers nationwide instead of awarding a few teachers. Is this a workable idea? The acting director general of the Ghana Education Service is Stephen Edu. He is now on the line. Good evening to you, Mr. Edu. Welcome to Radio Ghana tonight.
Oh, good evening.
Congratulations. Today, Teacher's Day.
Thank you very much.
Let me pay tribute to my class one teacher. He's called Mr. John Tetu. He taught me somewhere.
That's wonderful.
Somewhere in Apamanya.
I'm also appreciating the teacher.
Yes, indeed. Now, yes. So how did it go? Wonderful ceremony you had today?
Yes, I think it was a very wonderful function today. The vice president was there, at least to grace the occasion. So it was a wonderful day for us.
Now, so how many people did you award today?
Now we have over 62 people, including teaching and non-teaching staff. And also, we also had retirees, retired teachers. And we also had people like the foreign volunteers also to reward. Yeah.
I see. Now, can you tell us the selection criteria?
Now, the selection criteria, we have the professional aspect, which is the classroom teaching and learning. And then we also have the community support, the teacher's support to the communities. And then other things that the person may be doing. So these form the main criteria for the selection of the best teacher.
Is it difficult?
And it's from the classroom.
Is it difficult to get the best teacher every year, or is it easy?
It has not been very, very difficult, but the biggest challenge is when it comes to the selection at the national level, because you realize that all the people who are coming from the region are very good, And so when it comes to the selection, sometimes the difference is not all that big.
Now, can I tell us, do you award marks for the various categories, you know, and eventually you look at the cumulative results and whoever emerges tops, or it's just by observation?
But can you repeat? That's a very clear that.
Yes, you mentioned the criteria in various categories from the classroom, the community,
right,
and all that. Do you award marks to the various categories, you know, of performance, and then you add them up and come up with the
yes,
final winner?
What do you do? That is what you do. So when you pick like the classroom teaching, for instance, there is a mark for that. And then we come to your support to the community, there is a mark for that. And then the sort of activity that you do within the community, there is also a mark for that. So we look at all these things and then put them together, and then we can then get the highest.
But so do you assess every single teacher in Ghana for the awards?
No, what we do is we start from the circuit level. So we ask the circuit supervisors, who are the supervisors of the schools there, to nominate people who are maybe excellent teachers within the circuit. That one, we don't do any test of the sort. But at least the circuit supervisors are with these teachers, and they know those who are performing. So they are given the first opportunity to nominate people for consideration at the district level.
But how sure are you that the circuit supervisors give you the correct results? Because there have been complaints about poor supervision at every level of education.
Yes, you see, the thing is that if you nominate somebody who is not a good material, it will be realized even from the first day. When you go to any school and then you are talking about a very good teacher, everybody knows a very good teacher. So I don't think if you don't do a diligent work, it will come up at a district level and everybody will know that the nomination that you made were not right. But at least as much as possible, they do diligent work. But even where there are cases where there are favoritism or whatever, it comes out very clearly even at a district level, and it will never even appear at a regional level.
So a three-bedroom house for the ultimate winner of the award today, was that?
Yes. The award winner came from Kumasi, a special school. He won the best, and then we had somebody from the Cape Coast University Practice School. They won the second, and then the third came from Dongkokrom area.
Now, these award winners, you knew them personally? You had met them before?
No, this was the first time I met them. I've never met them before.
There are concerns from other teachers who think that the awards are too skewed and that it should be spread evenly amongst teachers nationwide.
Yes, you know that this particular award is for excellence. You see, we award teachers in different ways, but this one is for excellence. So the spread, we are trying to spread it. So if you look at the recent award, you could see that even the schools are benefiting from the awards. So any teacher who wins, at least the schools also benefit from the award. So you could see that it will be very, if you spread it thinly, then it will not be regarded as an award of excellence. So at least no teachers are complaining, but we are trying to introduce a number of awards so that at the various different levels, at least they will have something.
What kind of awards are you thinking about?
Now, this particular award is for motivating teachers. That is the first thing. We want to motivate teachers for enhanced performance. And it's all about recognition. Recognizing the teacher, that the teacher is very, very important. And there are so many ways of motivating teachers. Now, if you go even to the school level, if at a district level, you are even recognized as a very good performing teacher, that alone in itself is a very high recognition of the teacher at that level. Now, apart from that, we are also trying to improve on the situation, the facilities in the schools. It's also another way of motivating the teachers to teach. You go to some schools and the teacher even doesn't have a chair to sit on. And if the teacher is given a very good classroom facility and all that, that also is a way of motivating them. And then the government at head level is also looking at enhancing the salaries of teachers and other allowances so that all these at least could form part of the enhancement program for the teacher. So we are looking around, and we are also appealing to the communities to also provide some support for the teachers. In the past, when you used to go to any village, the best house that you may find in the village will be where the teacher will be staying. We want that thing to continue.
Now so we,
at least everybody will be recognized.
I understand you are in a certain meeting right now. Is the best teacher with you there?
It's likely I can, yes, I can look for him, but maybe you can talk while I look for him.
Yes, let's be talking while you look for him. So, looking at the performance of the teacher in the classroom, does that include the performance of the kids he teaches?
Yeah, in fact, that reflects, because if you are talking of a best teacher, it will reflect in the performance of your students. So, by all means, the best teacher, you have to have a reflection of the performance of the teacher.
Well, but you are you with me, Mr. Edu?
Best teacher. Yes, I am with the best teacher right now, so you can talk to him.
All right, but I'd like to talk to you again. So let's now speak to.
Yes, I am still around. So you talk to the best teacher and
Mr. Joshua Abankwa. Okay, I'll do that.
So you are with the best teacher.
Okay, Mr. Joshua Abankwa Otu. Congratulations on your award. Hello, Mr. Otu, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Welcome to Radio Ghana. Congratulations on your winning of the Best Teacher Award today.
Yeah, this is an increase.
Can you hear me?
Hello.
Hello, I'm on the line, please.
Yeah, you say you have to raise your volume a little.
I'm doing exactly that.
Hello.
Yes, Mr. Abankwa, can you hear me now?
Can you hear?
Yeah, I still know.
Mr. Abankwa, can
you say you cannot hear very well?
But Mr. Edu, you can hear me clearly. I wonder why he cannot.
I can hear you clearly. Yes.
So let's try it again with him and see how it goes.
Yes.
Hello, Mr. Otu, can you hear me? Good evening, Mr. Otu, can you hear me?
Good evening.
Good, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
So how do you feel? You are the best teacher in Ghana this year.
Hello.
Yeah. Mr. Otu, can you hear me? Hello, Mr. Otu, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
I'm asking, how do you feel the fact that you are the best teacher in Ghana today?
Hello?
Mr. Otu, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm hearing you now.
Now, I'm saying that you are the best teacher in Ghana today. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I feel honored and humbled, that's where.
You feel honored and humbled. What did you do to get this award?
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Otu. Can you hear me?
I beg you.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Otu.
It's unfortunate he's not hearing very well.
I'm surprised he's not hearing very well.
You know, he's a teacher in the social school. You know that?
Yes, I know. I understand.
He's a teacher in the social school, so...
I understand.
He has been using the sign language for a long time, so...
I understand.
That's why he's not hearing very well.
Yes, indeed. I understand. Okay, but Mr. Adu, today you are awarding teachers, and many teachers some teachers are also complaining about the fact that they've not received salaries for months. And there is a text message here I'd like to read to you before you respond to that question. This one says, do you know that newly trained teachers who were posted since last year September have not been paid till now at the Bibiani Anyuan Subekwai District? Government and GES must watch out or else massive demonstration awaits them come the end of this month. This one came from teacher Gibson in Sehu Bekwai. Are you aware of that?
It's very, very unfortunate. These teachers came out just last year, that's 2010. And normally the process starts from September. They first of all have to go to their schools, report to their schools, and then the process starts. And we only got the placement, whatever they have done, from June. So when we had it in June, then we have to process it. But you see, we do it about 2 months even earlier. So all the processes that we do from June will have to be August. So that is how it goes.
So
we have received some of them. We are working on some of them. But those that we still not even received from the district, some of the newly trained teachers. So that is why we said that if anybody has a complaint, he should let us know, because we need to find out where the problem is coming from. Sometimes the problem may be even with the district office. Not even, it hasn't reached the headquarters. So that is the problem that we have in our system. You know, it's a long process.
starting from the school to the district to the region and then to the headquarters. So that is how the process goes. So that is the problem we have.
Okay, Mr. Lu, just hold on, because we have one of the teachers from the Upper West region, who is called Khalid Mohammed Sadiq, and they are also threatening to go on strike. Let's listen to their problem so that I can also respond to him directly.
Okay, all right.
Khalid, good evening to you. So what exactly is your problem?
Thank you very much, Radio Ghana. But let me use this opportunity to congratulate my senior colleagues in the profession who have been awarded today for the good work they've done in the profession. Yeah, but it's rather unfortunate that once our senior colleagues have been awarded for the good work that they've done in the profession, we are rather crying for the unfortunate incident that is happening to us. Just as you said earlier on, we have not been paid for the past 13 months. This is exactly the 14th month that we are in.
Are you newly trained, teacher?
We are not newly trained. We were trained last year. Our juniors have just come out of college. So we call them the newly trained. We were trained last year.
Okay. Now, have you followed up on your salaries?
Yes. Yeah. Just as he said, you know, there's a process that you need to follow in the Ghana Education Service. So you start, when you are in a school, you start from your headmaster. From your headmaster, you go to the second supervisor with your problem. From the second supervisor, it goes on to the municipal director. From the municipal director to the regional director, before it goes to the director general. So if you look at the chain is such a long process that it has to go through. But in our case, what you do is that sometimes you jump the first two processes, that's through the headmaster to the second supervisor. You go to the municipal director, they're supposed to be an IPPD officer. And in the Upper West, as late as February, we had finished filling all our IPPD forms. We had finished filling all our IPPD forms. So we were hoping that at least by May, we should have had our salaries.
Okay, Mr. Adu, is it a normal thing for salaries to delay for newly, trained or whatever?
It doesn't come as a whole region of the sort. It is sometimes when they fill the IPPD form from the district, you may even detect that some of them are problems. Because, you know, we also have to go through scrutinize to make sure that they are the right people. Because recently, we have found some other names coming up who are not in the system. So that is why it has to go through all these processes to ensure that all the forms that have come are the right forms and the people are in the system. So sometimes the unfortunate thing is that some of these forms are queried because there are questions that need to be answered. But unfortunately, getting back the information to the IPPD officers and also getting to the teacher to make sure that the right thing is done, sometimes that is where the delay comes from.
Why
from the district?
Why is that a challenge?
No problem.
Why is that a challenge? Because now you can just pick a phone and call somebody. I'm sure that they should provide their phone numbers on the forms they fill.
This is the recent day, that's what we've introduced. It's not in the original form. But at least we have asked that they write their phone numbers just at the corner. Just recently, not long ago, about a month ago, there was even a form that was, we had some problem with it. And when the number was called, that person is even working in an institution somewhere. And that is where the problem started from. You see, we have got some people who are into the business of pushing a lot of names there. Because if you look at the number of teachers that we process in a month, it's a big number. I don't have them number here. But I can assure you that all those that you receive from March have been processed. But unfortunately, some of these things may be from the district, and before it comes, the IPPD, they are delayed there. We know that there are problems in some districts. That is the problem we have. But the moment you receive those things at headquarters, we work on it to ensure that the processes are facilitated. And like we said from the beginning, we used to have a very big number. We have a problem. The controller gives us very few days. And in a few days, we are not able to process as many as we want to process. So we have the intention of buying a server so that during offline, we can then input some of the data so that when the controller opens the machine, then we can get all these things through.
We
are in the process of acquiring a machine at least to facilitate that.
Yeah, because this problem of delayed salaries for teachers has been there for long, and I was just wondering.
Unfortunately,
yes,
we are addressing them. We have two ways of addressing them now.
The first one is ensuring that from the district straight to the headquarters, when it comes, we have now employed more other hands so that we can have more people working on it. So that if you are given even just 10 days, you'll be able to input as many of the forms as possible. And then the second option is...
You employ the teachers from the headquarters. So why is it that you have to go back from the district, you know, from the school level, and then you climb up to the headquarters again before payment is effected?
No, it's all about validation. Because, you see, it's about money. And it's one of the key insistence from the Minister of Finance that we need to really get the right people. Because if you are aware, there are also some indications of ghost names sometimes appearing in the system. So we have to go through the validation process. It is the validation that really makes the whole thing very, very long. Because the process, the IPPD form has so many areas that you have to fill and you have to satisfy a lot of conditions. So we are on it. And I'm very sure that when the decentralization fully comes into being, all these challenges at least will be reduced to the minimum level.
Okay, so Khalid, are you satisfied with the explanation given by the Director General?
This explanation has always been the case. It has always been a pattern. There is an institutional failure, and we must accept that somebody somewhere is not doing his or her work. We are teacher trainees who have been on allowance for 3 years. We have our staff IDs. We already have our names and our staff identities on the system of the Central General Department. So it is just that you have to agree that to the statutes of senior superintendent too, in the GES rankings. So if we go back to few new RDPDs and they send it to control our Central General Department, it's just a matter of verifying from the system whether I, Mr. Khalid Mohammed Swanik, is actually a professional teacher. If I'm a professional teacher and I'm still in the service, you upgrade me. And any list that comes to the municipal and district municipal or district offices in Ghana here are always verified by the Teacher Education Division of the Ghana Education Service.
So are you still receiving your allowances?
Can I conclude, sir?
Yes.
If you are not qualified as a professional teacher, you are never and ever going to get your registered number. You can never get your registered number. So if we have our registered numbers, you just look at the system. Key in my name, key in my staff ID. If you key in my staff ID and it doesn't tell you with what I have on the RTTV form, you have the right to question that.
You said Khalid, hold on. So Mr. Adu, is it as simple as that?
What he's talking about is maybe another problem. You see, because for the newly trained teachers, when you come out as a newly trained teacher, you don't need to look for another number. The number is given to you just after you complete and your results come. And you know that when you complete school, the results do not come immediately.
Mm-hmm.
The moment the results come, then you start the process of recruitment. But for those who are looking for, they are the non-teaching staff. But for the teachers, you don't have to look for any new number. But the problem that is coming up, if I can get him right, is the fact that maybe there are problems at the district IPPD. Because if you have two different numbers, then automatically there's a problem somewhere that we need to solve. So what I will appeal to the upper west is that if they can even let us know those numbers, they can even send it directly to the Director General, and then we can work on that. Because it might be that there's a big problem somewhere that we need to find.
So they should not have filled another form to have an IPPD number?
No, you don't need to do that.
Halim?
You don't need to fill another form. Because if, you see, the problem is that if he's a newly trained teacher, you only fill that one. But I don't know why they are getting two different numbers here and there. That's why I'm saying that if he can forward the problem to us, to the Director General, we will work on it as a specific problem that we have.
Okay, so Halim?
I didn't have the regional director around here. I'll find out from him. So what district specifically is he talking about?
Salid, which district are you in?
Hello, I'm currently in one municipal, but it's a problem.
One municipal.
It's a problem pertaining to the whole region. Yes, I want to make a correction here. I'm not talking about we having two IPPD numbers. No.
Okay.
What I said is that we already have staff IDs and registered numbers as professional teachers. So if you go to the System of Control and Accountability General Department and you key in my name, Khalid Mohammed Swanik, a professional teacher who graduated in the year 2010, you realize that my my detailed information will come on the system of control and accounts general department. So when I complete college and fill the IPPD forms, if you are suspicious of my form as a teacher, what you simply do is that you verify from the system of control and accounts general department.
Mm-hmm.
Every year, every particular academic year, every headmaster in every school is supposed to take the details of his or her teachers in the school and send it to the municipal office.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this has been done.
Sir, are you getting me?
Yeah, I'm getting you.
There is an institutional failure of processing the funds from the municipal level to Accra. And that is what should be checked.
All right, Halid.
If I apply for my salary adjustment from February, and February to September, I've not seen anything. I have every right to complain on that. Because
All right.
My duty is supposed to be in the classroom.
All right, Halid.
Somebody's duty is to work on my salary in the office.
Halid, thank you so much for talking to us. Halid Mohammed Sadiq is a
thank
spokesperson
much,
for concerned teachers in Upper West Region who say they've not been paid since the appointment. Now, Mr. Edu, just briefly, your last word on this, and then we should
yes, what I would say is let me appeal to my honorable teachers that they should exercise patience. And sometimes if these challenges come, it might be just human error. So I want to appeal to them that they have so many channels that they can address their problem. If they think that at the district or at the regional level there's a problem there, they can write directly to the Director General for action to be taken. Because sometimes some of these things might be even, like he rightly said, it might be an individual maybe who is not doing his or her work. And we need to get to the bottom of the matter. So I want to use your forum to appeal to my teachers just to exercise patience and let us know their problem so that we can, as quickly as possible, do something about that before they think of any other option.
All right, Mr. Dewey, thank you very much for talking to us
You're
again tonight on Radio Ghana. And enjoy your night. Stephen Edu, Acting Director General of the Ghana Education Service. You're listening to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. You can reach us on all FM stations of the GBC across the country and on the internet at gbcghana.com. Well, reports just received from Tema say some facilities at the Tema General Hospital have been gutted by fire. Our correspondent there now is Dominic Lonji. Good evening to you, Dominic. Where are you right now?
Good evening, Abraham. I'm currently at the Tema General Hospital where a fire has gutted a self-contained house where a lab technician, Gideon Lamte, lives, resides. The fire destroyed personal effects, documents, and all other things that you can think of.
Dominic, you say, I'm sorry, the facility belongs to whom?
The facility, I understand, belongs to the hospital, but a worker at the hospital lives in the facility.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so his personal effects, things that you can think of in somebody's bedroom, somebody's living room, somebody's entire apartment has been gutted by the fire, and they cannot pick even a pin from the house.
How about the occupants of the house?
Hello?
How about the occupants of the house? Are they safe?
Yeah, the occupants of the house were away to church when the thing happened, so they returned with their arms on the have with their arms on their heads, so to speak, in despair. And the fire service were called to quench the fire, and they were there in time to put the fire under control. As I speak, there is no fire raging. They've put the fire under control.
But
nobody has been hurt. The personal effects of the people have been destroyed.
Can you tell what caused the fire?
According to the fire personnel, they cannot ascertain as of now what caused the fire, but haven't interacted with the owner or the one who resides in the room. He is suspecting electrical fault.
All right, Dominic, thank you very much for talking to us tonight. Fire got to the house on the premises of the Tema General Hospital from where Dominic Kalonji, our correspondent, just reported. You're listening to Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. We're back to the issue of noise making, and I'm sure that today you saw that on the front page of the Daily Graphic, church on the Springtex Road, Ebenezer Worship Center, has been ordered to close down by a court. A court injunction has been placed on that church because of noise making. We want to speak to an executive member of the Association of Charismatic Churches, Reverend Gideon Titi Ofeh. He is in the line now. Gideon to you, Reverend of Titi Ofeh. Welcome to Radio Ghana tonight.
Good evening. The name is the National Association of Charismatic and Christian Churches.
Association of Charismatic and Christian Churches, NAC.
Yes, I'm the General Secretary.
General Secretary. Thank you very much, Reverend Gideon Titi Ofeh. So, is the issue of noise making a concern to you, to the association?
Yes, it is. It is worrying when you see that a worship center has been shut down because of noise making. It is worrying because worship centers are places where people find solace, where people find comfort, where people find friendship, where people are helped to overcome certain problems. So if it is shut down, it's worrying. It is quite worrying. Yes.
Worrying that it has been shut down, or worrying that it did not obey the laws of the land in keeping noise under control?
Historically, you will notice that the church in Ghana has played major roles in various communities. Churches in communities have built schools, have built hospitals, have helped clean up communities and all those things. So the church itself in communities is very useful to the community. The problem here is not a church locating itself in the community. The problem here is the church-community relations that most pastors do not have the skills to be able to build for it effectively. For instance, it is worrying, like I said, it is worrying that the church did not succeed in building relationship with the community, listening to the community, finding out the problems of the community as far as the church is there, and to be able to respond to the problems raised by the community. It is worrying. So it is worrying in two ways. It is worrying that people go to a place to meet God and be shut down. And it is worrying that the church did not, because the church did not listen to the community and could not build the right relationship with the community, it has led to the closure of the church.
Is it a matter of building relationship or a matter of being concerned and, you know, about the people in the community and making sure that they are not unduly disturbed?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That I'm saying that if you build relationship with the community, you will not do things that would disturb the community. You will listen to the community. The community will tell you, this and these are the things that the church is doing that we don't appreciate, and you will listen to the community. Of course, it's lack of communication, lack of relationship that will create a situation that has come about.
At your level as an association, do you educate your members on how to handle noise?
Yeah, it is important to note that it's not every church, every charismatic church, that is a member of the association. For instance, the Ebenezer Worship Center that made the front page of the Daily Graphic today is not a member of the NAC.
Mm.
And therefore, it is difficult. It's an association, a freedom association. It is difficult to bring every charismatic church under NAC. However, churches that belong to the charismatic, the NAC, consistently and frequently are advised to adhere to national laws and national regulations in relation to the operation of churches. And therefore, NAC members are advised to be law-abiding, and therefore NAC members are educated in things of this nature.
But would you say that churches are misapplying or misunderstanding the scripture that says, make a joyful noise unto the Lord?
You know, the Bible says, make a joyful noise unto the Lord. It's not saying, make a joyful noise to your neighbors. So when you are making the noise unto the Lord, you make sure that it does not disturb your neighbors. It is very important for me to add, though, that as part of a charismatic worship style and faith. Noise making is part of the charismatic worship. That is why most churches now have gone to the stand of building soundproof chapels, having air-conditioned worship centers, so that they can make their noise without disturbing their neighbors. And this is what takes me back to my first statement, that pastors must learn to build their community relations skills. And once community relations skills have been built, you will be able to live in a community, start your church in a community, worship the way you think it is right without disturbing the community. I know of a case where the community has said they were not going to allow the church to move into that community. The pastor of the church went from house to house, one after the other, meeting especially the opinion leaders in the community, assuring them that we are not moving into this community to create any inconvenience to you at all. We're coming into this community to be part of the community, to join you in building the community and helping provide leadership to young people in the community. And I'm telling you now, the church is in that community. The church has become a community church. People that first to the post, the church coming in there, now worship in the church. Their sons and daughters are being modeled in the church. So it's a question of developing community relation skills, listening to the community, and doing what the community...
And being sensitive to their feelings and plight.
Yes, of course. It's part of community relation skills. If you have community relation skills, you'll be sensitive and respect the right of people to have peace of mind, the right of people to sleep without their sleep being disturbed by the church service, the rights of people to enjoy serenity after hard day's work, and they have come home to enjoy some quietness and some tranquility. You will respect all those things because you have community relation skills.
Right.
And you can do all these things without your church getting affected at all.
Reverend, we thank you very much for talking to us tonight on Radio Ghana. Have a good night, Reverend Gideon Titi Ofer, General Secretary of the National Association of Charismatic and Christian Churches, NAC. And before we end this show tonight, permit me to say thank you to the teacher who taught me ABC, Mr. John Tretu. He lives at a village called Dawatrim, 5 miles from Asisawa in the Eastern Region. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. Now, just a couple of text messages. Although awards given to teachers is good, that cannot solve the educational problems. Rather, let's give them better services. Abudu Boli from WA, and this one from Samuel Mbongo: Ghana is too big to select one person as the best teacher. They should look into it. And that's it for tonight's edition of Behind the News, which came to you live from Broadcasting House in Accra. Production crew: Edmond Tete, Bryce Agama, Christopher Siedu, Kingsley Obin Chue. Behind the machines tonight, Samuel J. Abraham Donko is a summarizer, and my name is Abraham Asari. Have a good day.